Hello. We recorded this episode of Table Talk with Camilla Al-Fayed a little earlier in the year, before the current situation with COVID-19 had arisen. So if you hear conversation about restaurants and dinner parties with no mention of social distancing or isolation, that's why. We hope you enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Table Talk, the Spectator's food and drink podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast.
And I'm Olivia Potts.
And we're delighted today to be joined by Camilla Fayed, the vegan restaurateur, founder of the plant-based restaurant Pharmacy in Notting Hill, and the author of Pharmacy Kitchen Cookbook. Camilla, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
It's lovely to have you here. We're going to start where we always do with these podcasts, at the beginning. You had quite an international upbringing. Can you tell us what food was like for you when you were little?
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of correct that because, yes, I came from an international family and actually very, well, I suppose, culturally diverse, but actually it was a very English upbringing, born and bred in the UK. And I think some of my earliest childhood memories of food are actually very English.
What's the thing?
Oh, my God. I mean, I can go on. I mean, baked beans. I mean, massive baked bean lover from day dot. You know, jack of potato and cheese. I mean, it was nothing too exciting or exotic about my childhood, apart from obviously my parents' nationalities. One was Egyptian, the other one Finnish from Helsinki. So yes, I mean, the cultural influences were always at home, but otherwise, you know, I do actually feel very English.
Were there any noticeable influences, either Scandinavian or Egyptian, or was it just entirely British staple foods?
I mean, it was, you know, actually, interestingly enough, it's Finnish, so my mother's from Finland, and actually my grandmother has a strong Swedish ancestral background, so it was much more the maternal foods, and you know, my grandmother actually was an amazing cook, and she would, you know, often look after us and be at home with us, so a lot of her kind of Scandinavian influences were actually more prominent than more of the Arabic Middle Eastern ones. So, you know, again, a lot of my early childhood memories were much more around Finnish and Scandinavian cooking. So
what kind of things? Tell us about the cuisine.
Okay, I mean, your typical pickled herring. I mean, that's very much what we, you know, again, a very acquired taste. But we, you know, we love that. I mean, lingonberry jam, homemade lingonberry jams, a lot of meatballs and mashed potato. I mean, again, a very meat-heavy culture. You know, again, I think because of their climate and because of the cold Finnish winters, it was a lot of pickled foods and preserved foods and sausages and all the things that I really can't stand to this day, which is so funny because when you peel back in time, you kind of, I mean, I don't know, maybe it was just an overload of those kinds of foods that maybe has made me go the other way.
You went to school on the Sussex coast?
Yes.
Boarding school. What was food like there?
Very typical British food. I mean, it was baked beans, cheese, all the things that, again, I kind of grew to love. You know, very, very, again, unfortunately, a lot of processed foods. You know, we had a tuck shop that, you know, snacks that were, I mean, literally it was microwave popcorn, pot noodles. I mean, it was, you couldn't get any more conventionally school food than that. So, and that was, you know, for many years of my life, that was my food culture, and still is to many people these days. I think that the schools don't, unfortunately, they have not evolved in any way, and I think it's unfortunately still, they're still stuck in that processed food paradigm. So
obviously the way you eat has changed dramatically, and we'll come on to that in a moment. Are there any of those foods that you still enjoy, that still provide comfort, or have you really completely moved away from them?
I think, listen, I'm a sucker for chips. I mean, who isn't? I mean, you know, good. Again, you know, I would never go to eating meat again, but I think, you know, the kind of carb sides of that kind of comfort food always gets me, you know, every now and again, and why not? You have to enjoy food, so.
And when you were home from school, what were kind of meals like then? Did you, I mean, would you eat a lot at home or in restaurants?
Yes, I mean, we ate predominantly at home because there was such a, you know, we came from a very kind of, I suppose, foodie culture from both sides of my family. So there was always someone in my family that was cooking. Yes, we'd eat in restaurants as a treat or, you know, whatever, but otherwise it was not. We didn't used to eat out a lot.
And did you learn to cook as a child, or was it something that came later?
I learned to cook with my grandmother. So just watching her, genuinely just by kind of osmosis, I think it was just something that she would always do at home. My mother wasn't that great a cook. It was always left to her own mother. So it was, you know, I suppose it was just through watching people and understanding the importance of food and the importance of home cooking. But I think, you know, there's... I love food and I love to cook. So I think that's something that you can't learn almost. There's a certain passion that I have towards it that you just pick up.
You spent some of your summer holidays working in the Harrods kitchen. What was that like? What did you learn there?
I mean, listen, the Harrods production kitchen, it was you know, in such a, you know, epic scale of food production. And if you think about the building and the mass that it used to have to feed. And
is it at Harrods or is
it's actually in Harrods. It doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately. And it was, you know, I suppose one of the busiest kitchens in the UK. And to think that actually Harrods made all of their own food there. And if you think of the kind of epic, you know, history that the Harrods food halls held and the stories that it held, it, you know, a lot of it came from those production kitchens. And, you know, my father being a real foodie himself and also just kind of very creative with what he wanted to do with food at Harrods, really created a real food kind of go-to. And I think Harrods Food Halls kind of still holds that beautiful memory to this day. I mean, I did just silly kind of intern things like collecting food boxes and bringing them down and just overseeing certain, you know, processes and just watching people and just general, I suppose, production processes of a kitchen. Mm. But it was fascinating.
I mean, the Harrods Food Halls, they have this kind of magic quality. I mean, as a child going into them, it must have... And what did you make of it all?
I mean, it was very overwhelming because it was so big. And I think now, obviously, when I go in there now, everything seems almost quite small in a way. But I think being, you know, I was in my teens, you know, early age, and everything just seemed so overwhelming, like it was operating some machine. But it was epic. I mean, you know, they used to bake their own bread and, you know, everything came basically from scratch.
That's incredible.
And they bought nothing in. Mm. Unfortunately, I think times have changed now that they do actually have to bring in a lot of the food. But yeah, back then that was, you know, late 90s or something.
Do you have a favourite item from the Harrods? Is there something that you always pick up whenever
I mean, not now, but my favourite item, they used to have this like Chinese food counter, which was like my favourite thing to go and go and get. But again, it was amazing because they were making their own Chinese food down in the production kitchen. So it wasn't bought in from anywhere, but they had each cuisine had their own chef, you know, of the cuisine making the food there. So it was quite amazing.
The way you eat now is very different, as we've said. You follow a plant-based diet.
Yes, correct.
And you first of all went vegetarian before going fully vegan, I can put it that way.
Yeah.
Was that when you had your second child that you
went
vegan?
Yes, correct.
Can you tell us about the process that led you to go first vegetarian and then vegan?
Yeah, I mean, it was, again, a very personal journey. And I think most people, you know, do start with that personal journey of why they want to change a certain habit or, you know, change a certain mechanism within them. But, you know, mine was predominantly from a lot of personal health failures that I just thought to myself, something has to change. And being, I suppose, unwell, high cholesterol, things like that, that just, you know, in my early 20s, I shouldn't have had those kinds of issues. And again, just researching and kind of scratching the surface a little bit of what, you know, modern day doctors would say or give you a certain medication for. Ultimately, I understood that actually it was more about what I was putting in my body and eating and drinking instead of so much of just trying to take a magic pill and everything maybe going away. So it was definitely looking more and more into the holistic sides of healing. And that's really how I changed my diet and just trying to kind of put the two and two together, that it's, you know, emotional health and physical health were also very tied. And I think cutting out meat was probably one of the best things I ever did for my physical health, actually. And then dairy, and then it kind of just followed on from there. So, yeah.
Was there anything that was particularly hard to give up?
Fish was hard to give up, yeah. I think because, again, we have this understanding of fish not being, I suppose, a conscious animal or an emotional animal, whatever it is, but it predominantly is not a health food, number one. I don't truly believe that. If you look at the state of our seas, if you look at the environmental health, if you look at overfishing, there's so many reasons of why we shouldn't be eating fish or certainly eating less fish now. But that was the hardest thing for me. I think also the taste of fish, I think it was, you know, what I enjoyed very much. but the red meats and the chickens, that was very easy for me to give up, yeah. But fish was hard to go.
You obviously founded Pharmacy. Have you found that attitudes to sort of plant-based eating have changed, I mean, since founding it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we, you know, pretty much the beginning of the business was started 5 years ago. At the time, there was absolutely nothing in the UK that I could compare Pharmacy to, especially at the time. People thought I was mad for starting such a business. But then on the flip side, I think a lot of people were waiting for something like that to happen. I think, you know, our cousins over in the US and Australia, and, you know, they're very kind of progressive in the way that they thought. And, you know, a lot of the there were some really fantastic restaurants, especially in the US, that I could compare Pharmacy to, but nothing in the UK. So, you know, as well as seeing a business opportunity and a gap in the market, I think that there was just a really strong belief and need to open something like that in the UK.
Tell us about the philosophy behind Pharmacy. How would you describe it?
Everything we do there is really based around provenance. So it's not so much that we shout that it's a plant-based or vegan restaurant, but it's very much about, you know, look, we always say food is medicine, the old Hippocrates quote, and that understanding that where you get your food from, the understanding of provenance is key to any sort of health, I mean, understanding. And we really base the philosophy around that. And I think we have our own farm, we run our own biodynamic farm, which has just been absolutely amazing in terms of the transparency and also, yeah, just the transparency of the supply chain for food as well. And I think that's what people are craving more and more, is they need to know where their food comes from, ultimately.
What sort of dishes tend to be popular at Pharmacy?
Well, a lot of our menu is based on, well, we say the nutritional takes on classics. So, you know, you've got your mac and cheese, but it's not laden with dairy and, you know, heavy processed cheese. It's one of the best sellers there. And it's actually one of my favorites. But again, it's really well made. Everything that we do at Pharmacy is made in the kitchen. So it's a scratch kitchen. We start everything from all the sauces to the dips to, yeah, you name it. It's all made with us.
What's in the mac and cheese if it's not cheese?
Okay, so it's a vegan roux. So again, it's not nut-based. So we'd make it from... So what we try and do as well is not use too many nuts, obviously, with the amount of nut allergies as well. And I think a lot of vegan food is laden with nuts, so we try and move away from that. But yeah, it's delicious. You have to come and try it. Yeah.
And you've recently opened a residency, a pharmacy in New York. That's 6 months. Residency that we're about halfway through,
yeah.
And have you noticed a real difference? You said before that there was some place in New York that was sort of doing what you were thinking about Pharmacy. Have you noticed a real difference between London and New York diners and how they find Pharmacy?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, look, New York was definitely a place for us that we wanted to go and test the market in. I think it's more California and that side of the US that have more plant-based restaurants. Mm. New York have some, but not that many. And again, you know, working with local farmers and local biodynamic farmers out on the, actually it's up in the Catskills in New York. So that's just basically upstate. We are, again, getting all of our produce from a fully transparent source. So, and again, there isn't a lot of that in New York. And I think that's what people have loved so much about what we're doing. It's the traceability of where your produce is coming from, which has been amazing. But culturally, I think opening a restaurant in New York has been similar to London, but again, the pace of New Yorkers, I mean, they do nothing else but go out to eat there. I mean, it's quite amazing. Yeah. So I think Londoners have much more of a kind of calmer approach to eating out. I mean, New Yorkers literally eat out breakfast, lunch and dinner. So it's really interesting, the pace of everything, pace of service, pace of chefs, pace of everything that we do is just much faster, which is great. But it's been, you know, obviously we have some of our core team out there and it's been slightly different for us to adjust to just those kind of nuances within restaurant culture. But otherwise it's pretty similar to here.
And at home, when you're cooking for yourself and your family, what do you like to cook?
So I try and cook with my children as much as I can. I love to cook. I mean, again, more kind of child-friendly foods. I mean, my daughter can make an amazing pasta sauce, tomato pasta sauce. But again, those kind of simpler dishes, but again, are the foundations to good cooking.
Are their diets plant-based?
They eat meat as well. Yeah, they eat meat. So I think my son's going vegetarian. He's just naturally more vegetarian, but it's something that I choose not to push onto them. I think there's no point. They can, when they become slightly more emotionally intelligent, they will choose for themselves. Yeah, so I mean, I love to cook predominantly with my children. We make, you know, veggie pies, pasta, sauces, rice dishes. I mean, just, yeah, things that would be suitable for more of the kids, obviously, that I would eat too. I actually don't cook meat myself at home.
And has having children changed your outlook on food and eating?
Yeah, I think so. I'm definitely much more cautious about, you know, they are also very cautious about, you know, labels, reading labels, what's on the back of labels. You know, we try and spend time actually looking what ingredients is in what. We look at sugars, we look at, again, it's just trying to, I suppose, maybe educate them at a younger age just to be slightly more informed. I mean, I definitely was not that informed at all at that age. So maybe just giving them a head start, I think.
And how about dinner parties? Do you enjoy hosting them?
They love dinner parties.
What do you cook? What's your kind of classic go-to dinner party?
I mean, I love doing, say, like a curry. So I love doing family style, sharing. I love doing different. I mean, I would definitely say much more. That's when my kind of, I suppose, Middle Eastern backgrounds would come out, and just lots of dips and sauces and, again, crowd pleasers. So, but everything family style, I think it's just so much easier than plated foods. Everyone can help themselves. I don't like anything too fussy. I want people to feel at home. And the idea of a dinner party is that you feel comfortable, ultimately, for the host and for the guests. So just try and make people feel as kind of, yeah, homely and welcome, and have that element of comfort food too, I think, is important.
And when you're not at home, where do you like to eat out?
At pharmacy.
If it's not pharmacy, is there anywhere else?
You know, honestly, I did, the reason why we started the business also is because there wasn't that many places that I could, you know, track provenance and, you know, look, say Spring, what Sky's done with Spring is absolutely amazing. And Ruthie Rogers with River Cafe. I mean, I've got my very few favourites of where I can say I love to go and eat. But that's it. I mean, I find it hard to eat out otherwise because...
You don't know what you're getting.
You don't know what you're getting. Or where it's coming from, where it's flown, you know, flown from all over the world. And it's... I'd rather not be, you know, contributing to that.
The farm, yeah. You mentioned before that supplies pharmacy is in Kent, is
yes,
that right?
Yes, correct, yeah.
And do you spend time there?
Yeah, I live there. I live there full time.
Tell us,
yeah,
about that.
So we started the farm, my family ultimately, and we started that to basically farm for family and friends and grow our own. And we actually ended up, the plot isn't that big, it's about an acre. And we ended up having so much produce that the overspill we were just basically sending to the restaurant. But it became such a source of excitement and such a source of, I suppose it was very... You know, just to have the chefs engage in a way that was, I suppose, new also for them. And that understanding that chefs should coexist with nature ultimately was something really exciting for the restaurant. So we were sending a lot of produce up there and creating specials with the produce, and it just became more and more and more. So we basically started an initiative that the chefs would come down once a week, harvest with us, learn about soil quality, learn about really where their food that they were cooking with came from, and the importance of good soil quality, the importance of not using pesticides and fungicides and chemicals in farming. And I think that really has been such a, it really is the heart and soul of our kitchen now. But it kind of came through default, basically. So, yeah.
We normally finish by asking people what their comfort food would be. What if you had to pick a kind of vegan comfort food, what's your ultimate go-to?
I'd probably say something sweet, like a sticky toffee pudding. We do an amazing one with a vegan custard. Nice and comforting.
How do you make vegan custard?
Oh, my gosh. We use an amazing product called Aquafaba. And that's the, I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's the water from chickpeas. And you can use that in savory and sweet dishes as a thickener.
You can make meringues from it,
can't
you? You
can make meringues from it. You can make, I mean, there's, I mean, vegan cheeses. I mean, again, like a mac and cheese roux would have it. And it's such an amazing tool, plant-based tool to use in the kitchen. So again, we would use this amazing ingredient, aquafaba, with, again, things like oat milk or, you know, again, a sweetener like a stevia or a date or date syrups, and just try and keep things as natural as possible. the colour isn't always as white as you want it, but the taste is just amazing. So as long as it tastes good, it's fine. Yeah.
Camilla, thank you so much for joining our
podcast. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us on the Spectator's Food and Drink podcast. For more recipes, food history, stories and drinks, you can head to the Spectator website. Céleste, ne fuis pas.